The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
So our prelude this morning was David Bowie's A Better Future, a track on his 2002 album Heathen. And it's one of several musical conversations that Bowie has with God. He was actually speaking to God in that song. In talking about the song, Bowie said that he had had, quote unquote, rosy expectations for the 21st century. I really did, unquote. As we know, however, the century got off to a less than reassuring start, with a mounting number of mass shootings and the terrorist attack on our country on September 11th, 2001. So, as an anxious father, some would say a good father, and a disillusioned citizen, Bowie meant this song to be a plea to whoever that higher spirit is, because I want a place where my daughter can grow up safely, walking open-eyed into her ambitions, not having to dodge bullets, quote unquote. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm Cindy Westfall. I've been attending our fellowship here for a little over a year, welcoming you on behalf of the congregation. This congregation, this fellowship, is dedicated to exploring new paths to kindness and spirituality. I'm delighted and honored this morning to assist Reverend David Hunter in the pulpit. Reverend Dave has led us in worship many times in the past. I just met him for the first time today because I haven't been coming for many times in the past. He and his wife, the Reverend Carrie Mueller, have three times retired from ministry, the third time for good. Is that true? Not counting occasional guest preaching. He just told me that he's been guest preaching for the last 4 weeks straight, memorial services, and he is in an active membership in the mainline Unitarian Church. Dave is a graduate of Princeton University, the Harvard Law School, and Wesley Theological Seminary. He was an attorney at the Department of Justice. In the voting section of the Civil Rights Division from 1975 to 2000. Dave and Carrie moved to Whitehorse Village, a retirement community near Media, in 2018. This morning, Reverend Dave asks us to step back from day-to-day challenges and concerns to look from the balcony at what Unitarian Universalism is, or might be like in 30 to 50 years. As you know, we're in a period of transition with bylaw changes that reconfigure our denomination's covenant. Some of us may be experiencing some disillusionment and anxiety regarding what it all means for the future of our denomination. Where is our denomination headed? What might our UU future look like? Can we expect a better future? I'm looking forward to how a seasoned minister like Reverend Dave Hunter responds to questions like these. On behalf of Reverend Dave, the TPUF Worship Committee, and our fellowship as a whole, I welcome you, whoever you are, wherever you may be on your spiritual journey, on your life's journey, whatever you must in conscience, truly, responsibly believe, however you identify and express your gender, whomever you love, and whoever loves you. I invite you to worship along with us this morning, beginning with the singing of our gathering song, "O Welcome in This Day with Praise." Oh, I'm sorry, okay. And I introduce to you Reverend Dave Hunter.
Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning. Spinner, weaver of our lives, your loom is love. May we who are gathered here be empowered by that love to weave old patterns of hope and new patterns of memory into a web of life that is strong, beautiful, and everlasting. Now our gathering song, oh, welcome in this day with praise. I hope the tune is familiar. It's Old Hundredth. Does that mean anything to you? Well, it's in our hymnal a number of times, but not with these words. So the plan is for me to lead the singing. And the words will be up there. And shall we stand? Or in body or spirit? Okay. Oh, welcome in this day with praise. Give thanks and faith, proclaim always. In boisterous strains our voices raise, that those beyond may hear our lays. Sing loudly till the stars have heard, in joy let ring out every word. We're here to share with one and all. We stand as one to hear the call. Love is the message of this church. We sing together in our search to spread the message through the land, that all may join us hand in hand. The fullness of our gifts is known in neither thought nor love alone. Our glory's in the two entwined, the joining of our hearts and minds. Thank you. You may be seated. The chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith, signifying many things, including our openness to the wisdom of many ages and many traditions, and our commitment to keep the light of truth, the warmth of compassion, and the flame of justice and liberty burning within ourselves and in our world. May peace be with you, with us.
So at this point, we are going to let the children go out to the nursery and or their learning room. And as they recede, we'll sing hymn number 413, Go Now in Peace.
Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the Spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
Okay. And Reverend Hunter now has his message that he's going to share with us.
First, the responsive reading.
Oh, I'm sorry, the responsive reading. I'm gonna step over here.
And the responsive reading will be right up there. We aspire to a religion that is universally accessible.
Not restricted ethnically or geographically, nor by gender or age or race or status. With exclusionary practices.
A religion that recognizes that even in religion, change, evolution, and growth are possible, sometimes even desirable.
Especially if done gradually, not abruptly, by consensus, not division, with no assumption of infallibility.
A religion that recognizes that God suspends neither the laws of nature nor the principles of logic, that we humans are responsible for our own fate.
That the only way that God can work in the world is through our hands, that bad things do happen to good people, and good things to bad people. You don't always get what you deserve.
A religion that recognizes that death is part of the cycle of life.
And that our salvation must be found, if anywhere, in this world, not in the next.
And that salvation cannot be found person by person.
But is for the community as a whole that is larger than we think.
A religion that appreciates the value and lessons of myths and legends, that is enriched by metaphor.
But is wary of unrestrained literalism and is content to operate within history.
I found it here. Good to see everybody today. And I got here without making any wrong turns or missing the exit. I've been a Unitarian Universalist about half my life. I've been involved in religion one way or another my whole life. I'm committed to Unitarian Universalism, my chosen faith, and I'm committed to the institution of religion. And I've been wondering, what will Unitarian Universalism, what will religion be like in 30 years, in 50 years? So I decided to ask those who will, in due course, answer these questions, today's children. A few weeks ago, I traveled by Amtrak to Washington, D.C. to have lunch with a few old friends from my time at the Department of Justice. At 30th Street Station and at Union Station, and on the train, both southbound and northbound, I talked to a number of children, with their parents' permission, of course, to learn about their religious lives, to try to gain insight into what the future has in store for us. What does all this have to do with the view from the balcony, you may be wondering. When I was young, we would frequently visit my grandparents in Lansing, Michigan. It's about 2 hours from where we lived. On Sunday, we would all go to the Presbyterian Church, practically next door to my grandparents' house. My brother and I would consider it a special treat to sit in the balcony. Fast forward a few decades to Ronald Heifetz, a Harvard professor and an expert on leadership. For him, the view from the balcony is a metaphor for how leaders might analyze problems. He explains that it's an image that captures the mental activity of stepping back in the midst of action and asking, what's really going on here? So let's go up to the balcony and look down, get the whole picture, at least a better picture. Recently, talking to those who are the future of the church has been my way of looking down from the balcony. I'll share with you this morning several of the more interesting interviews from this project, 7 of them actually. At the beginning of each interview, I would make a simple request to the young person. Please tell me about your religion. Let me warn you that Carrie, my wife, if she were here, might tell you that I just made all this up myself. But who are you going to believe? Here are the responses of 2 children, Jalen and Jesse, ages 11 and 9, growing up in a Presbyterian family. First, Jalen. I like going to church. I like being in church. I'm not sure why. I like the way it feels when we're all in the sanctuary together, when I'm sitting in the pew between my parents with Jesse. I like it when the organ plays, filling the sanctuary with its big, mysterious sound, and when we all sing the hymns. It's the music when we sing the hymns. It's the music, not really the words. It's the music that gives me that funny feeling. But sometimes when I'm not at church, the words, not just the music, will just pop into my head. as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen, amen. I'm not sure what that's all about, but it's part of me. It feels like a safe place, our church. My grandparents, my mother's parents, were with us for the weekend recently. Usually they and my father have a good time together, but this time something seemed different. My grandparents seemed cool. It's not like them. My father seemed to go out of his way not to engage with them. I don't know. Maybe that was all in my imagination. But Sunday morning, it felt especially good to be in the sanctuary again, to recite together, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." It was as though all was right with the world. We're Presbyterians. Why? I don't think anyone has ever asked me that before. We're Presbyterians. We just are. We always have been. I know that some of my friends are Methodists, some are Baptists. I don't know why. They just are. What's the difference? I have no idea. I guess I've always assumed that there weren't any differences, that we're all really the same underneath, just a different label. Most of the time when we go to church, I'm in Sunday school. That's okay, usually. But it's a time in worship in the sanctuary, looking at the stained glass windows, leaning against my mother's shoulder and falling asleep during the pastor's sermon, waking up again at the sound of the organ. That's what's special. Next, Jesse, the younger child of this Presbyterian family. I've been going to church with my family every Sunday as long as I can remember. The church, well, you could say that it's at the center of our life. Recently, my father's gotten even more involved than he used to be. A lot of late-night meetings. My mother has even taken to nagging him some for being out so much. And we all like the new pastor who started last fall, a woman. She's just as good. But lately, I've gotten worried. We all believe in Jesus. That means we're saved. We'll all be together again in heaven. I'm thinking of my grandparents. They're getting old. My grandfather turned 75 a few weeks ago. But what about the people that lived before Jesus was born? What about the people in China or India who've never heard about Jesus? Will they be saved too? God must have thought of this and taken care of it. But I feel confused. Over on the other side of town, there's a synagogue. I've never been in it. My mother says the people there, Jews, I think she said they're called, that they don't believe in Jesus at all. What will happen to them? In Sunday school this year, we've been reading stories from the Old Testament. We've learned about Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Joseph and his brothers. But I've been thinking about Moses. His people were held in slavery, and finally Pharaoh let them go. And they set out for the promised land. Then Pharaoh changed his mind and sent his army after them. And then they were at the Red Sea, and how were they going to escape from Pharaoh's army? There are two things that bother me. First, God parted the waters of the Red Sea so they could escape. Well, Moses knew the Red Sea was there, didn't he? Must have been on all the maps. Why didn't he choose a different route? But more importantly, what's with God here? Can God just do that, part the waters? I've never heard of anything like that in our lifetime. Why hasn't God intervened in Ukraine, in Gaza? But what happens next bothers me even more. Pharaoh's army continued to chase after the Israelites, and God released the water, and they all drowned. That just doesn't seem right. It wasn't their fault. They were just obeying orders. Couldn't God have saved the Israelites without killing all the soldiers? I haven't read much of the Bible myself, but how do we know it's all true? Jesus taught his followers to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and that it's better to give than to receive. That seems to make sense. Is that because Jesus said it, or is it something else? Sorry, one question just seems to lead to another. The adults in church recite the Apostles' Creed every Sunday. I wonder if they understand it. Will I be able to understand when I'm an adult? I believe in the resurrection of the body. Do I? How should I know? What if you've been cremated? And next is an interview with a child, Amari, age 12, whose parents are, or at least were, hostile to religion. I think, well, I'm quite sure I got my ideas about religion from my parents, but now they've changed their minds. Holy bother, Let me explain. My father's family was Jewish in an ethnic cultural sense. I doubt if my dad ever set foot in a synagogue growing up. My mother's family was AME. That's African Methodist Episcopal, you know. AME in the sense that someone asks you what you are and you say AME, they won't give you a hard time. Hers was the kind of family that might complain to the pastor that they sing the same hymns every time they come. You do know that joke, don't you? It's the family that goes once a year at Easter time. My parents taught me about religion by their behavior, by their skeptical and disparaging remarks, and by direct instruction. Religion is a mistake. It's misguided, a crutch, a superstition. You're better off without it. My mother's an engineer. She likes logic, mathematics, verifiable facts. She can't get two sentences into the Bible without talking back. Who says? How do you know? My father's a nurse. He gets upset when chaplains or priests try to comfort patients or the families with assurances of God's love. When they offer prayers for help, he knows won't be delivered. I assume this is for me. So here's what happened. A couple of months ago, my parents attended a memorial service for a colleague of my mother's who had died, a memorial service at a Unitarian Universalist church. They were impressed with a no-nonsense attitude towards death. They were impressed that it was the celebration of a life and not just an opportunity to drum up business for Christ. They were moved by the hymns they sang. There's one they mentioned in particular, Spirit of Life, I think it was called. During the reception, they talked to some of the members of the congregation. They were touched by their stories of how they had discovered Unitarian Universalism and what it meant to them. They talked a little with the pastor, who was very welcoming, and gave them some pamphlets. So they've been going to that church pretty regularly, and now they want me to come with them. I should unlearn everything they've taught me. They had been telling me that it's time for me to start becoming more independent. I agree. I can decide about Sunday morning for myself. They told me about the so-called OWL curriculum. I forget what that stands for, but it's about sex. Come on, they think I don't know all that stuff already? Where do they think I've been hiding? Actually, I think I know a few Unitarian kids at school. They do chess club, poetry, tutoring, book drive. If I start hanging out with them, there goes my reputation. The next child, Riley, age 11, has been growing up unchurched. Religion, that's unknown territory for me. It's not part of our family's life. I went to a wedding in a church once. I didn't get much out of it, had trouble hearing what they were saying, couldn't see very well from where we were sitting, and it seemed to be over when it had just begun. Friends of my parents, I didn't know them. Apparently they're divorced now. My parents are divorced now too. My mom's been seeing a guy, says he's a Mormon. Should I care? My father tells me that he was brought up Catholic, but his parents were pretty indifferent to Catholicism, just sent him to church to make their parents happy. He stopped going when he was a teen and he's never gone back. My mother was brought up Lutheran part of the time and Episcopal part of the time. It depended on where they lived or which priest their parents liked better. But they were marginal at best and didn't object when she dropped out when she was a teen. She said she had a renewed interest in religion as a young adult. I think it had to do with someone she was dating, but it didn't last. I do hear about church some from friends at school, but it doesn't make much sense to me. I'm interested in the here and now, not in the pie in the sky by and by. Social injustice, income inequality, racial discrimination, global warming, mistreatment of animals, war, Trump, that's what concerns me. How does spending an hour in church each week help with all that? The next child, Quinn, age 10, is from a, quote, spiritual but not religious family. When kids ask me where we go to church, I don't know what to say. The simple answer would just be to just say, we don't. But the way they asked the question, I don't think that would satisfy them. I've asked Dad about that. He suggested, not very helpfully, that he suggested that I should say that ours is a spiritual but not religious family. Great. I don't really know what religious means, and I sure as hell have no idea, not the slightest idea, what spiritual means. Pop hasn't been much help either. He said his family used to go to church when he was young, but not very regularly. Then when he was about 11, they moved to a new town and never bothered to find a new one. Am I missing something? We take long hikes together, Dad, Pop, Chris, and I. We go to the shore several times during the summer. They take us to concerts and museums. We talk about the future, about how we should treat other people and animals, about what the world might be like in 50 years, about whether there's life anywhere else in the universe. I'm taking cello lessons. Am I missing something? In God we trust. I've heard that slogan. No one's ever been able to explain to me what it means. I've been told, not by Dad or Pop, but by others, I've been told that I should love God. I say, okay, I'll try that. What do I need to do exactly? How does one go about loving God? I never get a coherent answer. And now we have something else. Pop and Dad told me recently that they've decided to get married. That was a shock. I guess I just assumed that they were already married. That's the normal thing, isn't it? They feel that it's a big deal. They want to do it right. They've always understood that weddings are held in churches, or at least that the ceremony is performed by a minister, by a member of the clergy, but they're not part of a church, spiritual but not religious, remember? They've been looking around and asking friends. They haven't made up their minds yet, but they're thinking of asking the minister at our local Unitarian Universalist church whether he'll do it. Oh, I think they referred to the minister as she, actually. I have no idea what Unitarian Universalism is, but maybe I'll be finding out. And next we have Emerson, 12 years old, a child finally growing up in a Unitarian Universalist family. I'm a Unitarian Universalist. Did I say that with conviction? Did I say that with pride? Actually, it's much more complicated than that. I'm not really sure what I am, and I'm quite unsure about what I'll be in 5 or 10 years. But I hope I'll stick with it. Here's the deal. My father was brought up UU. His father had been brought up Unitarian, his mother something else before they were married, Evangelical United Brethren, I think it was. My mother was brought up Presbyterian. She thought it was important to bring up the children to have a religious faith. He wasn't so sure. His concession was that he would agree to have a family religion as long as it was Unitarian Universalist. As a Presbyterian, he would feel like a hypocrite. My mother acquiesced, but without much enthusiasm. So they brought up Chris and me as UUs. Family attendance has been irregular, and they don't volunteer any more than they can get away with. I'm the active one in the family. I often ask myself why this is, and will I keep the faith when I'm older? Here's my take on Unitarian Universalism. Here's why I'm part of it. First, we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We don't give up on people. We don't believe that anyone is going to hell. Second, we believe in our world, this world, here and now. We need to take care of our planet and all its inhabitants. We need to be part of the struggle for justice, the struggle for peace. Third, we believe in the use of reason and in the empirical approach of science. I don't know about God, but I certainly cannot accept a God who occasionally intervenes and sets aside the laws of nature. What a chaotic world that would be. Fourth, there's more to life than math and science. There's music, art, poetry, mystery, love, and on and on. Fifth, there's no substitute for religious community. We need the love and support of others, and they need ours. But what will I do if I fall in love with a Presbyterian or with an anti-religious, fully secular atheist? Here's the last one. Cameron, age 11, the child of a religiously mixed marriage. Couldn't you ask me something easier, say about sex, politics, or money? I don't know much about religion. We don't talk about it in my family. Here's the situation, as I understand it. My mother is Jewish, or was Jewish. My father comes from a Muslim family. They met in high school in Detroit, Michigan. They kept up with each other off and on over the years, and when they were in their late 20s, something happened between them. They got married. I don't think either family fully approved. We see my mother's family from time to time, and we see my father's family from time to time, but we never see both of them together. I haven't dared ask about the wedding. I wasn't there. Well, actually I was, but not so one would notice. We don't talk about religion at home, but maybe because of that, I'm quite interested in it. I've done research on the internet, and my friends and I at school have long, deep discussions. Being half Jewish and half Muslim and living in a Christian society, I try to find the common elements, the best features of the three faiths. I don't know if it's possible. The first challenge is Jesus Christ. Judaism and Islam are unequivocally monotheist. A God in three persons, a Jesus who is both man and God, human and divine? I don't think so. I can accept Jesus as a teacher, a prophet, a victim of the Roman oppressors, but that's as far as I'll go. The second challenge is God and the man God picked to get things going. I don't mean Adam or Noah, but Abraham. God instructed Abraham to kill, to murder his son, Isaac. And Abraham, without hesitation, agreed and would have done it if God hadn't intervened in the nick of time. Abraham didn't even consult the boy's mother, his wife Sarah. What kind of God gives such commands? What kind of a man obeys them? Do I have to make up my own religion? Or is there a faith community, a religious home that is waiting for me? I'll let you answer that question, and I hope your answer is yes, there is a religious home waiting for you. Right here. Amen. What's next now?
The matters of the heart.
No.
I can introduce it.
Yes.
Thanks, Reverend Hunter. That was just amazing messages from our youth. Now we're going to take some time to listen to an interlude, and then afterwards, we invite you to come forward at that mic over there, it is on, and bring forth anything that's weighing heavily on your heart and soul, or anything that's giving you great sadness, and anything that maybe might be giving you great joy that you would like to share with us.
We can bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life, which was referenced not too long ago. The words will appear here on the screen in a moment.
Our closing hymn is My Life Flows On, Endless Song, which is will be up on the screen. It's in the hymnal. Wisdom, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment, these we carry in our hearts and in our hands until we are together again. Amen. May faith in the spirit of life, solidarity with fellow participants in the long stream of history, and respect for the dignity and worth that we affirm in each other be our anchors and our guides now and all the days to come. Amen.